Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Kaiju Carnage. I am your host, Cal the Kaiju Guy. And today, I'm going to be discussing a film that I am very, very fond of. Like, it's the way it was shot, the way it was done. Like, it's just, it's an amazing little movie. It was an independent film, so the fact that it was able to be made and able to accomplish what it's accomplished and have DVD and Blu-ray releases in Japan as well as internationally, it's quite a feat that this film was able to accomplish. And it is the short film that was done in 2019 that is called Howl from Beyond the Fog. Now, I was unaware that this movie was even in existence until it was getting time for its international release here in the States. I follow an individual. I've shared lots and lots of his artwork on my Facebook page as well as my Instagram. He goes by the name of Matt Frank. I'm sure some of you know who he is. Some of you may not know who he is. But if you don't know who he is, check out his artwork, Matt Frank. Just type up Matt Frank Kaiju or Godzilla or something like that. He's one of the best kaiju artists out there. He's done the artwork for numerous Godzilla comic books and everything. Like, he's about as good as it gets whenever it comes to kaiju art. And I follow him on my social media accounts, and he posted this picture about Howl from Beyond the Fog, that it was getting a release. And I was like, what in the world is that? And so I clicked on it and I started doing research on it and everything. And I was like, oh man, like this looks pretty awesome. Like, cool. And so I started digging, found out everything about it, you know, and all that. And it was already made. It had already been distributed in Japan, I believe. And it was getting ready for its big distribution here in the United States. And I was bummed at the time because I wanted to be able to support the film. I wanted to help with the film, like get its funding and all of that. And there's another reason why I was bummed, and I'll get to that towards the end of the episode. But I love the movie. I'm not going to lie, I do. It's a short film. It's only like half an hour long, 35 minutes, something like that. If you're really into old school kaiju films where suitmation is pretty much like 100% what the film is all about, and the mini sets and all that kind of stuff, I absolutely recommend that you watch this movie. I have the Blu-ray copy of it, and I watched the movie on Blu-ray. And there's a special feature in there just called The Making Of. The Making Of documentary is just about as long as the movie is itself. You know, it's about half an hour long. And just to be able to go behind the scenes and see the way they created the suit, how they made the sets and everything like that, it was an eye-opening experience. I really enjoyed everything about this movie. I've told you guys before that I'm a big guy on rating movies on IMDb. Rotten Tomatoes, not so much. I'm mostly focused on IMDb because while I don't let critic scores or audience scores or anything like that affect my opinion on whether or not I want to see a movie and whether or not I enjoy that movie, I know there are lots of people that live and breathe by ratings and things like that. I know people personally that whenever a movie comes out, they'll check the critic scores. And if the critic scores on like Rotten Tomatoes are really low, or, oh, well, this movie ain't no good, I'm not watching it. No, I'm like, dude, like, you know, don't listen to the critics. Like, watch it for yourself. Make your own opinion and everything. And oftentimes, like I've found whenever I go to watch a movie, you know, the critic score might be pretty low on Rotten Tomatoes. You know, it might be like 40% or 50%, but then you look over at the audience score and it'll be like 80%, 85, something or like that. And so, like, you know, don't just listen to the critics. And on IMDb, I know because just about any time you Google a movie, IMDb is one of the first websites that pops up, and it has the user rating. You know, it'll show, like, oh, this movie has gotten 250,000 votes, and it has a 7.9 out of 10 stars. I think it'd be safe to say that the movie is pretty decent with that, with that, that amount of reception. So yeah, I'm a big fan of rating movies on IMDb. As soon as I was done with the movie, I gave it a very rare 10-star rating. I don't give 10 stars to films very often, but this was one of the ones that got 10 stars. Now, I know some people that have attempted to watch this movie that's either messaged me on Facebook or they've commented on some of my posts, and they said that they just couldn't get into the movie. It dealing with, like, puppets and all that kind of stuff. There's no actual actors in the movie. It's all done with miniatures, the kaiju suit, and puppets playing the human characters. And, you know, there are some people that just, like, they're like, I can't get over, you know, the use of puppets. It just looks off. It doesn't look right and everything. But, you know, I mean, to each their own. I'm not going to lie. To each their own. If you're not into, you know, a movie like this that, you know, is 100% made from props and puppets and all that kind of stuff, I'm not going to knock you. Me, personally, it doesn't really bother me. I grew up watching things like The Muppets, you know, so I'm very accustomed to watching TV shows and movies and things like that. That is just Muppets, puppets, you know, people in suits and all that kind of stuff. So the way this film was made did not bother me in the slightest, but I know it probably will bother some people that try to watch it. But try not to let that stop you. Definitely go watch the movie. It's a fantastic movie. I enjoyed it from start to finish, and it's only about 30, 35 minutes long. So even if you're, you know, if you've only been watching for 15 minutes and you're like, I'm not too deep into this, okay, just go another 15 minutes. You're halfway through. Just go ahead and finish it off. But, so yeah, that's my opinion on the film. And let's jump straight into it, shall we? Now, I'm going to go on ahead and say that there is very little information about this movie available online. So I am very, very grateful that on the Blu-ray copy that I have, I'm not sure if it's on the DVD copy, because I've never bothered looking or checking it out or anything, but on the Blu-ray copy of this that I have, thank the gods that there was a making of documentary, because without that documentary, this episode would be, let's see, I've been rambling for 8.5 minutes, this episode would be about 11 minutes long. Like, that's just how little information there is out there. Like, everything that I would go to, my usual websites, I would try to find blogs and things like that, anything that I could find on this movie, and they all pretty much had virtually the same information. Oh, it's a short film, this was the director, this is what it was based on, this is how it was received. Like, everything, like, for production and all that kind of stuff was limited to, like, one paragraph. And I'm just like, are you kidding me? And so, you know, I plugged in the DVD, Blu-ray to watch it, because I've told you guys before that I always watch the film just prior to recording or taking my notes or anything. Usually a day before I actually record. Sometimes I watch it and then immediately start recording. Like, I'm taking my notes as I'm watching the film. And I plugged in the Blu-ray. After I watched the film, I watched the making of, and while that making of was on, I watched the whole thing, and I was like, you know what? I'm taking my notes from that. And so I just started the making of documentary over, and I was just jotting anything down that I could. So some of the information I'm going to be kind of iffy on, like, because there's nothing actually that I can confirm what I saw. Like, I would see something and I don't exactly know like what the material is that they use to make like a particular part of the suit or something. So I just wrote down, it looks like this, it might be something different, you know, or something like that. So, yeah, that's pretty much how I did the notes for this film. And let's jump straight into it. First of all, whenever I was talking earlier about I wish I could have supported the film while it was being made, the reason I say that is because this was a Kickstarter film that was crowdfunded at the end of 2017. So that's why I said I wish I was there to be able to support the film instead of just finding out about it as it's fixing to make its big release here in the States. Now, I've mentioned earlier that the film was made entirely with puppets and miniatures. And there's actually only one legit actor in the movie, and that is the guy who was in the kaiju suit. The kaiju's name in this film is Nebula, by the way. And that he's pretty much the only legit actor that's in that's in the film. Everybody else is puppets. Now, this movie is based on the Foghorn. Now, some of you may sit there and say, like, man, the Foghorn, I've heard of that before. The reason you've heard of that before is because I've mentioned it several times in the history of this podcast. The Foghorn was a short story that was written by Ray Bradbury. And the Foghorn was also the basis slash inspiration for one of my all-time favorite kaiju films, The Beast from 20,000 Fathoms. And so the film is based on The Foghorn by Ray Bradbury, and the film itself takes place during the Meiji era of Japan. And for anyone that may not know what the Meiji era is or was or anything, if you're a fan of anime, if you've ever seen or heard of Rurouni Kenshin, which I actually have an episode on the first live-action movie of Rurouni Kenshin, that film and anime and all that takes place during the Meiji era. It was right after the samurai had fallen, swords are outlawed and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, gunpowder and guns are, like, starting to become pretty well used around that time. So that's pretty much the era that this film takes place in. Now, the film was directed and written by a man by the name of Daisuke Sato. I believe that's how you pronounce his name. If I'm incorrect, I apologize for that. But he actually made a film adaptation of The Foghorn back in 2007. And he just simply titled it The Foghorn. The film was never released. Like, it's never been put on YouTube. I looked for hours online trying to find any little bit of footage that I could find for The Foghorn. So if anybody out there is more, like, if you guys know other ways to be able to search for something that does not seem to exist online, you know, send me a message on Facebook or something and say, like, hey, I found it, or hey, I found the teaser trailer or something. Even if it's only like 10 seconds of footage, that's going to be 10 seconds more than what I've seen so far. So if any of you guys are able to find any of the footage, kindly send that to me, or let me know, like, send me the link, or let me know what to type in on what website or something like that, so that I can actually watch some footage of this. The film was made not really to be like, oh, look, you know, I just love The Foghorn so much, like, it's just a little fan film and all that kind of stuff. He made it because he was a legit fan of The Foghorn and Ray Bradbury, but he made the short film, it's only 20 minutes long, just to show what his skills were as a director. And not only to show his skills, but to show the skills of his cast and crew with being able to build suits and the miniature sets and the lighthouse and all that kind of stuff. That was the sole purpose in existence of making this short film of the Foghorn. And way back in like 2008, 2009, I found a forum online while I was digging. And it's the only thing that I can see. It said that he is open to releasing the film online, like putting it on YouTube or something like that, if there is enough fan interest in it. But I can't find anything else. And trust me, as a fan, I'm very interested. I would love to see his little 20-minute film of the Foghorn. I would absolutely love to. But, you know, as of right now, it does not seem that the it does not seem that it can just it can be found. So, you know, whatever it is what it is. So, in 2016. It was the film was crowdfunded in 2017, but in 2016, they're gearing up to start trying to tease fans about this movie, engage what the interest for the movie is going to be and all of that. So they went on ahead and created a concept model showing Nebula and the girl character that is in the film. The girl is just simply standing there by herself and Nebula's head is coming down to where, like, she's standing right next to Nebula's head, just for a size comparison, I suppose. And they showed this model at a fan convention in 2017, and fans were very interested. They walked up to it, and, you know, and they were like, hey, what is this? What is this about? What's going on with it and everything? And they would explain, oh, this is just a concept that we're kind of working on. We're just trying to gauge fan interest and all that kind of stuff. And the fan interest absolutely was beginning to increase. So they decided, okay, we've got some fans interested. Let's go ahead and shoot a teaser video. Like, you know, intentionally make the video only about a minute and a half long or something to see if that gauges any interest from fans or anything like that. So they began work on the teaser video. Now, for the teaser video, they went on ahead and made part of Nebula, the head of Nebula specifically, to be used as a hand puppet. Now, the head of Nebula, the mold of it was made from styrofoam, like the base of it was styrofoam. They cut out basically the basic shape of the head and all of that. And then they covered it in clay. And after it was all covered in clay and the clay had dried, they carved out the scales and everything that was going to be on the head. And they painted it, added different colors of paint to it to really give it more of a grayish kind of monstrous type look. And so that's what they did. And that was just for the mold, for the clay and everything. Then they would put, I'm not sure what the material is, guys. It was some kind of, you know, rubber. I think it was some kind of rubber or something. They cut the mold in half and they filled it with rubber. And the head was made from that, basically. And then they put the two parts together and they had their little hand puppet. And so that's what they did. And for the teaser video, all they made was that hand puppet for Nebula and then a full body miniature of Nebula. And the miniature measured, if I had to take a guess just by watching that behind the scenes video, I would say it measured probably about 8 inches tall, including the neck, and probably about 20 to 24 inches long, like from head to tail. And they made the hand puppet head, a full body miniature for Nebula, and then they also, no, I'm sorry, not yet. I got a little bit ahead of myself, guys. And for Fog, because the movie is very fog heavy, obviously, just because of the name, the title of the movie, Howl from Beyond the Fog, there's going to be a lot of fog. They just simply used a smoke machine to generate fog and all of that. So they shot the teaser video, which they used the miniature of Nebula and just kind of had it walking and the camera was focused on it, and they added in little miniature trees and all that kind of stuff, and it was surrounded in fog and all of that. And then they would use the hand puppet for close-ups and having Nebula open up his mouth and all of that kind of stuff. And they decided to use, since it is based on the Foghorn by Ray Bradbury, they decided to use a foghorn sound effect for Nebula's roar. And that's actually very accurate to the foghorn, like, in the story itself. Because if you haven't read the story, or if you haven't listened to any of my other episodes, mainly The Beast from 20,000 Fathoms, where I talk very detailed about the short story, basically what happens in the short story is there is a lighthouse, it has a foghorn on it, and they keep sounding the foghorn. It attracts a sea monster-like thing. The sea monster, in its description, kind of looks like a brontosaurus, which doesn't make a whole lot of sense, you know, like a brontosaurus slash sea monster, but, you know, whatever, it is what it is. But the foghorn attracts the sea monster because it believes that the lighthouse is one of its kind. So obviously, its roar sounds very, very similar to a foghorn. So anytime in the movie, whenever you hear Nebula roar, it sounds exactly like a foghorn. And I thought that was a pretty cool little thing that they did. So there was a fan expo in France. And they go, the creators of the show, like the cast and crew of the movie, they go to this fan expo. And there they showed art, many figures. They showed the Nebula puppet and all that kind of stuff. And they released the teaser video, which, again, they're still just doing all of this to gauge fan reaction, to see if there's going to be interest, what are they going to do, and all of that kind of stuff. Because there's no studio behind this. This is not like a Toho production or anything like that. This is literally just a handful of people that is creating all of this stuff to see if somebody wants, you know, would like to see it. And then they're going to have to get funding on their own to try and make this movie. So they leave France and they go to a Tokyo comic contest in December of 2017. The guy that I mentioned just a little while ago at the beginning of the episode, Matt Frank, they meet him. I don't know if they actually met him there or if they met him someplace else, but they asked him to draw promo art for the film. And Matt Frank is a huge fan of this film. He's posted about it more than once on his social medias. It's because of Matt Frank that I even know that this movie exists. So he drew some promo art for it. I have a small card of the promo art that he did. It's just a reprint, obviously. But it came in with the Blu-ray copy that I ordered. And also what came in with a poster that I have framed and hanging up in my quote-unquote studio that I have for recording. So, yeah, so the teaser video was released. They have promo art. They've got miniatures. Fans are starting to show massive interest in this movie. And so they said, okay, like, we're going to do one more video. You know, the first video, we pretty much just showed Nebula kind of walking around it a little bit. We're going to put a little bit more detail into what we're wanting to do. And we're going to try one more teaser video and we'll see what the reaction is to that. And then we'll gauge whether or not we're ready to actually begin trying to get this funded and to start filming. So they bring a man by the name of Keizo Murasaki. I believe that's how you say his name. In April of 2018. And he joined just to create the Nebula suit that an actor is going to wear while making the movie. Now, this suit is a very complex looking suit. And I'm not going to lie, I don't know if a whole lot of the other kaiju suits that have been made were just as complex as this one, because I've never really seen any making of or behind the scenes stuff of some of the older classic kaiju films. So I've never actually seen video footage of how the suit is made, but they pretty much did a step-by-step, you know, journey in this making of documentary that was on the special features of the Blu-ray, showing how all of this was done. And you actually get to see them cast the molds, make the materials, like attach the parts, like all the different parts of the suit together. You get to see it at its base model, at its very thin layered model. You get to see it as they were like putting the painting and like props and effects and everything on it. You pretty much get to see the entire journey on how they made this suit. And it was pretty great getting to watch them make this. Now, pretty much the whole base of the body for the suit was styrofoam. They just got styrofoam and they cut the different parts how they wanted it to look. You know, they cut like a shoulder part, then they would cut an arm part to cover, like, you know, from just below the shoulder to the elbow, and then they cut another part that would cover the forearm. They made claws that would go over the hand. Every bit of it was done with styrofoam. And then they covered it with a very thin layer of, I'm going to guess that it was some type of rubber that they had carved the scales in and all of that kind of stuff. And they would just put that over the styrofoam. From what I gather, I could be incorrect. Like I said, most of my information is coming from this documentary, and all I could do is just basically repeat what I was seeing. But there's not a whole lot of explanation as to what I was seeing as they were doing it. So, you know, I'm kind of just spitballing here. So the body was covered in the very thin material, and the tail itself, how they made the tail was they took circular shapes of styrofoam and cut them. They were pretty thick. Like, they would be like kind of up towards the base. I would say it was about 12 inches across, and it was probably about 6 inches thick or so. And they would have it at the base of the suit. Then the next part, it would be a tad bit smaller. The next part, a tad bit smaller and a tad bit smaller. And they kept going until you just had all these rings of styrofoam that was very large at the base, and then going all the way down to the tip would end up being very small. And they put like a rod or something in between there, something that would attach them all, but you could also get it and like the tail would actually wag, kind of. And then they took some type of like nylon material and covered the tail. And then they put the very thin material with the scales and everything over that, so they could shake the tail, would actually move around as if it was a real tail. They kind of made, if you ever seen any of those toys, like those little gimmick toys of wooden snakes, and the way that they slither and everything, you know, it's just little wooden blocks, but they're attached to one another with little small itty bitty like knobs or something. And whenever you shake it or move it, you can actually make it seem as if the snake is slithering around. They pretty much did that exact same thing, just on a much larger scale. And instead of using wood, they used styrofoam. And that's pretty much how they made the tail. The head had a complete working jaw. And, you know, the head appeared to be made of metal, and then they covered that with a very thin layer of styrofoam, and then put a thin layer of the rubber stuff over that. And then what they would do then was they had a long pole with a mechanism on the end, and they attached it to the head of Nebula, and the mechanism on the end to where, like, the user could be holding the end of the pole, and the pole was probably about four or five feet long or something, and they had it attached to the head so that an actor could move the head whatever direction he wanted to and all of that, and then he could just squeeze the trigger and the mouth would open and close and all of that stuff, and then they just simply used CGI to remove the pole from all the shots that they did. It was a pretty cool way that how they moved the head around. And in the movie, this was a pretty cool effect to me. In the movie, Nebula has the ability to inhale fog, like great amounts of fog, and after it inhales the fog, he's able to blow it back out really hard, kind of like a wind breath attack or something like that. And the way that they filmed him being able to suck in the fog was they just simply put a fog machine or a smoke machine in Nebula's mouth. They would turn it on. At first, Nebula's mouth is closed, and you would barely see the smoke coming out of its mouth. Then Nebula would open its mouth all the way. They would increase the rate of the smoke coming out of the machine. Even more smoke would come out to where it would look like Nebula was actually breathing smoke. And once they filmed that, how they filmed just how Nebula would inhale the fog, they just played the clip in reverse. And it ended up being pretty cool. So the entire suit ends up getting made, and the actor, how he would get into the suit, there was a whole, I guess I would say, like a hatch that was on the back of Nebula. And when I say back, I mean actually like the creature's back, like where the spine would be. And they would lift this part off, and the suit actor would have to crawl in through that way and then be on his hands and knees while he was in the suit. And then they would just simply put the hatch back on. They would clamp it back down and cover up, because in the film, Nebula's back is covered with trees and vines and things like that. It's never really explained why Nebula looks like this. I don't care why Nebula looks like that. I think it's really cool that Nebula looks like that. And so, like they were able to cover up the clamps and the lines, like where the hatch met the rest of the suit and everything, with different little props like trees and things like that. And so he would get in, and he would be completely enclosed in. They wouldn't just, he wouldn't be in there, and they'd be like, oh, we'll just take the head off so that, he can have a breather or something like that. Like the only way for him to get out would be to remove that hatch that was on the back. And he would have to get in there. He would be in there for long periods of time while they would be trying to film the scenes for Nebula and all of that. It was difficult for him to breathe that was in there. Like there's at one point, the documentary is in Japanese, but there is English subtitles, and there's one point in the documentary where the director yells, "It is important that he's able to breathe." Like, so he had some issues being able to breathe while he was in the suit, and he would get very, very hot while in the suit. Like whenever he would go to get in, he would wear very thin clothing. He had a full like bath towel wrapped around his head to keep the sweat from like going into his eyes and all of that kind of stuff. Like it was just, it was an ordeal for him to get into that suit. So they film. It was during this time that they actually made the puppets for the human characters. And so they made it, they made the clothing and all of that kind of stuff. They shoot the teaser video of Nebula walking around. It's just an actor on its hands and knees, just kind of walking around and all of that. They shot a scene of the female puppet sitting there, like playing an instrument. And then they have Nebula like slowly look towards the screen, like looking directly at the girl, and then that's it for the teaser video. It was only like a minute long, if that. And they took this video, they go to G-Fest in July of 2018, they show the video. By this time they have, they have a good deal amount of props and artwork and things like that. They show all of this off at G-Fest. Fans are super, super interested, and they're like, okay, we're doing this. The Kickstarter is like gone. It's up 100%. They're accepting funding and all of that kind of stuff. And they get the funding that they need. I believe they actually went over their goal. I can't remember if it was 150% or 250%. I believe it was 150% over their goal that they went. And so they were able to buy even better materials and things like that. And actual filming for the film itself began in January 2019. And I'm just going to describe at this point some of the miniatures and the sets and things like that that they had made. Because, you know, with a movie that's almost 100% done with props and miniatures and all that kind of stuff, that's really all I've got to talk about. You know, I mean, I've already talked to you about the suit actor being in Nebula and all that kind of stuff and how the suit was made. So pretty much all that's left is just to talk about some of the miniatures. At the very beginning of the film, the opening scene is two individuals crossing a wooden bridge and they encounter Nebula. This wooden bridge, like, they actually made a very small wooden bridge, and the amount of detail that's in this wooden bridge is unreal. And it probably measured about 4.5 feet long, and that's with the droop in it, like after it was, you know, hanging and all of that. And it's a bridge that's supposed to go in between two mountains, so they had to create mountains. And how they made the mountains was they took big blocks of styrofoam and then used a heating tool to cut off parts of the styrofoam to give it this very rugged, rigid kind of look. Then they painted the styrofoam a dark gray, and then they kind of dabbed on there light gray in parts here and there to give it a very mountainous-like look. They got miniature trees. I say miniature trees, they were probably real trees that they just uprooted or something, and they stuck all of the small trees into the styrofoam to give it a very foresty kind of look, and then they hung up the bridge. So you had a miniature bridge that was in between two styrofoam mountains with miniature trees stuck all up in it. Now, the two puppets that they made, it was two. The figures themselves were probably, I'd say, about 5 inches tall. And one of them was attached to a small wooden cart that he was going to be pulling. And the wooden cart had, like, you know, working wheels. There was a small mechanism that they would pull to give the guy, to make his legs move, to make it seem as if he was walking forward with the cart. And then they made an even smaller, another figure that was going behind the cart, so it would be like one guy is pulling the cart, the other guy is helping push the cart. And that's how they made that opening scene. And I thought that it was really cool. Now, how they did the puppets. Naturally, whenever it comes to close-up shots and all of that kind of stuff, they could just be zoomed in on the puppet's face. They controlled the hands with little small rods to be able to move the hands around and all of that kind of stuff. But there were going to be some scenes in which the puppets were supposed to be running, or they're supposed to be traveling or something like that. And pretty much the way that they shot that was they just got one of the actors to suit up in a completely green suit. He would be behind a green screen and he just carried the puppet. And whenever he would be walking with it, then they would just use CGI to put whatever background that they wanted into the film. And he was completely edited out. And it gives the puppet very much it's walking on its own. Like, it's, you know, it's obvious it's not just a hand up into, you know, the backside of the puppet and all of that kind of stuff. Like, it looks like a puppet that's actually walking. And I thought that was pretty cool. Now, towards the end of the film, spoiler alert, if you haven't seen it yet, Nebula pretty much goes on a rampage and goes through a very small town and is just destroying all kinds of things. And, like, I don't know, like, I find it funny that whenever you're making a film like this, you spend so much time and effort building the miniature sets, the small buildings and all of the different, you know, intricate little details about this little itty bitty city that you've made. And then towards the end of filming, it has now become your sole job to destroy everything that you just made. And, you know, it shows them do all of that in this documentary. Like, you get to see them just, you know, they go from building to building and they would be at a certain angle. And it's okay, you're going to step on this building, or you're going to smash this building with Nebula's head. You're going to smash this building with its tail and all of that. And a lot of times they only have one chance to get this right, because these little buildings are very, you know, they're detailed. You have to glue them together. Like, I mean, you know, it would be, if you destroy one and the camera's not in the correct angle or something goes wrong, like, it would be, you know, pretty aggravating to sit there and say, okay, build another building. That's going to take, you know, probably 4 or 5 hours. And then as soon as that's built, like, step on it again. And there was a blooper that was in there where it shows there was this building that Nebula was supposed to be walking towards, and Nebula was supposed to step on it, and the whole thing was supposed to collapse. Well, whenever the actor raises up his hand, it was his left hand, and he goes to come down to smash the entire building, his hand landed just perfectly to where it went right through the roof, and all of the walls of the building remained standing. And you can hear the cast and crew kind of laughing and all of that. Part of the building was destroyed on the right side, so they had to change angles. They had to go in a little bit closer, had to move the camera slightly to the left so that the damaged part wasn't shown, and that it would just be more of a close-up of whenever they did the retake of Nebula's hand, or claw, really, coming down and destroying the rest of the building. And there's plenty of scenes where Nebula is just walking, and, you know, in the foreground they have little small buildings in the way showing, like, as Nebula's walking, and to kind of show, like, that as it's walking, it's kicking around debris and all that, while the actor was on his hands and knees just simply walking forward, there was another member of the crew that was behind Nebula that was hidden from the camera, and with every step that Nebula would take, the crew member would just take a handful of, like, little debris and throw it kind of up and out in front of Nebula, just to make it seem as if as Nebula was walking, he was kicking debris along with while he was walking. That was a pretty cool effect that they did. And so, yeah. Filming started in January of 2019, and it wrapped in November of 2019. So, they put a lot of detail into this. You know, obviously, like I said, it was a very small crew that was working on it. So, that's why it took longer than usual. Like, for example, there have been Godzilla movies in the past that filming would begin in, like, May, and would end in, like, September. Like, they would go through them very, very quickly. But they had dozens upon dozens of people working on the sets and building this and building that and working on this. So they were able to wrap things up in 3 or 4 months. This was just, like I said, a very handful of people. I don't think I ever saw, while watching this documentary, more than, like, 3 or 4 people on screen at a time. Like, it was just a very small handful of people. But boy, howdy, these guys did an amazing job on this film. And I'm glad that it took them a long time, from January to November, nearly a year, because they were able to fully put, like, all the detail that they wanted, take all the time that they wanted. Like, they handled it very, very well. And, the movie was a huge success. It's been rated very, very well on IMDb, Rotten Tomatoes, you know, anything like that. Fan reception, especially classic kaiju film fans, have had nothing but positive things to say about the movie. I have nothing but positive things to say about the movie. I know that, you know, there's going to be some people that's going to disagree with me because of the it being 100% props and miniatures and puppets and everything, but You know, for what it is, this was an amazing little movie. It was a great piece of cinema, and I'm just overly impressed with how the film turned out. And now, at the beginning of the film, if you remember, I said that I was bummed as to that I could not help support the film and donate to the film to help with its funding and all of that kind of stuff. One of the main reasons why, and this is a very selfish reason, I'm not going to lie, one of the tiers that you were able to, like, you know, depending on how much money you donated to the film, one of the brackets was you would get a Nebula minifigure. And it was very detailed looking. It was very cool looking. I would have absolutely loved to have had this Nebula figure to be part of my Kaiju collection and be on the shelf, or the shelves, really, that I have with Godzilla, Gamera, Ultraman, Gridman, King Kong. You know, I would have absolutely loved to have added this little figure to my collection, but I was too late finding out that the film existed. I was unable to donate to it, and it's unless they decide to do a mass production of the Nebula figure, it's very, very likely that I will never have a Nebula figure. So go ahead and just throwing this out there. If anybody out there wants to be kind and wants to be nice, if you ever are able to get your hands on a Nebula figure and you would be interested in getting rid of it, holler at me on Facebook or Instagram or something like that, and we'll see if we can work out a deal. Because I would absolutely, like I said, I would love to have one of these Nebula figures added to my collection. Nebula has become one of my favorite kaiju after watching this film. I hope that they do more with Nebula in the future. I would love to see some kind of sequel to this film. I would love to see a full-length feature dealing with Nebula and all of this kind of stuff. Like, I do not want it to end with just this movie. So, you know, go watch it. See if you can find me a Nebula figure. We'll wheel and deal. We'll see. You know, like, just go and, you know, watch the movie. And one of my biggest takeaways from this movie was the score. I loved the music. I loved the setting of it. Like, the score is, like, it was perfect. I just loved it. Guys, like I said, I very rarely give a movie a 10-star rating on IMDb. And I gave a 10-star rating to this film, and I absolutely believe it deserves it. And I know, for those of you that are listening to this episode, if you've never seen the movie, I know I just hyped this movie up like there's no tomorrow. And, you know, like, you're probably thinking there's no way this movie is going to live up to the hype that I've just given it. But, you know, it is what it is. I love the movie, and I've got nothing horrible to say about it. Please go watch it. Please go support it. Like, you know, you never know. We might actually get a sequel one day. If there's enough support, they might mass produce a Nebula figure that I want, you know. So help me help them to get more movies, more merchandise, more Nebula figures. Come on, people, help me out. So, all right, guys, that pretty much does it for Howl from Beyond the Fog. Hope you enjoyed the episode. I'm going to go on ahead and just do a few quick announcements. Nothing overly detailed or anything, but I have formally created the YouTube for Kaiju Carnage. The very first video has been shot, recorded. I have not uploaded it yet. I've only recorded it at the time of this recording, like 2 or 3 days ago, and I'm just kind of debating on what day of the week I should start releasing it. And not only am I going to be doing this YouTube, I'm doing a YouTube with a good friend of mine and fellow podcaster. His name is Chris. His podcast is called Kid Kong at the Movies. I've guest starred on his podcast three times, a spotlight on Bart the Bear, me and him bad-mouthing the first live-action Mortal Kombat film that came out, and for a Halloween episode, he did an episode on like the Godzilla franchise, which we talked about giant monsters and all of that kind of stuff. And he and I are going to be doing a YouTube where we're basically just going to talk about any kind of movie or video game that we want, or, you know, if we want to talk about sports or whatever, you know, me and him are going to do that. Like, we feed off of each other whenever we're, you know, recording with one another. It's going to be a lot of fun. I've created that YouTube as well, but we have yet to film any type of footage for it or anything like that. You know, we're trying to figure out exactly what we want to do before we get started on that. But the very first video for the Kaiju YouTube that will be focused solely on Kaiju, that will be helmed by me, I'm calling it the Kaiju Tube. It is recorded. I'm in my little makeshift studio that I made. You can see my collection behind me, or a pretty good chunk of my collection, not the whole thing. And yeah, guys, pretty much the whole gist of that, the episode I've done, it's just a introduction. Very similar to the introduction I did with the podcast, just letting everybody know, hey, this is me, this is what I look like, this is what I'm into, this is what this YouTube's going to be about, and all of that. And I announced that the very first official episode, or what the very first official episode is going to be, but I'm not going to tell you here. You have to actually go to the YouTube and watch it and see what I'm going to talk about on the YouTube. I'm going to try and keep the podcast and the YouTube separate as much as I can, so that, you know, people will actually go and check out the YouTube. So there's that. This Wednesday, it is time for Kaiju Carnage Presents for the month of October. It is spooky season, so I decided I wanted to do a movie that was kind of horror related. Now, whenever it comes to horror films, I definitely prefer the slasher genre, like the Halloween franchise, Friday the 13th, Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Like, I enjoy those type of horror films more than anything, because at their base level, no matter how silly the plot might be or how bad the acting might be, those movies are just about a psychopath that's going out and killing people. And to me, that's real. Like, that can actually happen. So that's a far more scary type of film than something dealing with a monster or something like that. And I say scary type of film, I've only been actually scared to the point to where I could not sleep or I had nightmares from three different films in my life. And I was a very small child whenever all three of those, I watched all three of those films. And yeah, they messed me up whenever I was a kid. But now as an adult, I own all three films. I can watch them regularly. They do not bother me at all. So I have conquered my fear of those movies. But this is a nerd podcast, so I decided, no, I'm going to go ahead and kind of keep with the nerdy thing and talk about something, you know, that fans would be more inclined to want to listen to, as opposed to, like, Friday the 13th that came out in 2009, you know, or something like that. That can be something that me and Chris will talk about in our own YouTube other than the Kaiju YouTube. But the film that I have chosen, I have mentioned not really just this film, but the franchise in general multiple times in the history of this podcast. I'm a big fan of the franchise. I've got books upon books, figures, comic books, and everything. And so it was originally intended to be a horror film. And I thought, man, there's no other better nerdy horror thing that I could jump into and talk about during spooky season than the film that started it all back in 1979, and that is Ridley Scott's Alien. Can't wait to jump into that one. I'm a massive fan of not just that movie, but its sequel, Aliens. I loved Prometheus. I loved Alien Covenant. I love both Alien versus Predator films. I have probably about 25 novels. Like, I'm not talking about comics. I mean actual novels of the Alien franchise and all of that kind of stuff. Like, I've got an ungodly amount of comic books and graphic novels concerning the Alien franchise. I'm a massive, massive fan. I could easily helm an entirely separate podcast solely on Alien, just Alien. I wouldn't even need to throw Predator in there, but I probably would because those two franchises go hand in hand. But, like, I could helm an entirely separate podcast just on Alien. So, at the time of this recording, Wednesday, this coming Wednesday, which that'll be, like, the 26th, the 25th, something like that, I will be doing Kaiju Carnage Presents Alien 1979. And then next Saturday, a week from today at the time of this recording, I have decided that I will be doing a lesser-known kaiju film. It is a sequel to a film I already did way back on, like, episode maybe, I don't know, 15. I did one called Raigo, King of the Sea Monsters. I am now going to be doing the direct sequel to that movie, which is called Raiga, God of the Monsters. It is a direct sequel to Raigo, and, you know, I was a big fan of Raigo, King of the Sea Monsters. I think there's not enough sea monster stuff out there, and I really wish that there would be. And so I was very into that one because sea monster just brings a whole nother, like, kaiju level of fear and anticipation and suspense because you can't see them most of the time. Like, they're under the water, and to me, that's just like, ah, man, that's just great. But Raiga, God of the Monsters, is not a sea monster movie. It's just more of a classic kaiju film. Can't wait to jump into that one. So if you haven't listened to Raigo, King of the Sea Monsters, go give it a listen. It's also on Prime Video, I believe, so go give it a watch. I'm not sure about Raiga, God of the Monsters. I believe it is also on Prime Video. It might be on Tubi, so I would check Tubi as well. And so go watch the film prior to listening to my podcast, and, you know, we'll have a good time. And then there's a third film in that franchise, and I will get to it later on down the road. So, all right, guys, YouTube is good to go. I just need to post a video. I will, you know, let you guys know on Facebook or Instagram whenever I've actually got that posted. So go give me a like and a follow on Facebook and Instagram, Kaiju Carnage, a Godzilla / King Kong podcast on Facebook, and Cal Woodman, Kaiju Carnage on Instagram for all of the updates and announcements and everything that go on for my social media. And then Kaiju Carnage Presents Alien 1979 this Wednesday, and then a week from today, Raiga, God of the Monsters. So, all right, guys, thanks for listening. Thanks for all the support. Thanks for all the kind messages that you guys have been sending me here lately. Means the world to me. Thanks a lot, guys. You guys are the best. There's plenty more coming down the pipeline. Plenty more. I'm nowhere near done. So, all right, guys, we'll catch y'all next time. This is Cal the Kaiju Guy, signing out.